Session number 16059, John Court, Reel 11.
Mr. Court, Reel 11. I think you were saying that when you were in Aldershot, you were waterproofing the tank. What did that entail doing?
Well, what we had to do was remove the sprockets on the front of the tank, take all the bolts out, the hole in the flange that held the sprocket in, and we had several tins of I should call it more like a black paint. I think it was I think they called it pressure plastic or something in those days. Anyway, it was a sort of rubberized solution which we dipped each bolt in, put it in, and then put them all back. And then the same with the engine plates at the back. Again, we would wash all around the plates, clean them, and then put them up. It was the thing was that we were told that after we had finished our waterproofing, they would go and we would go and have them tested, and also once they were waterproofed, if there was any weekend leaves going, we would be able to. But waterproofing the tank was the utmost. And I'm afraid quite a few of them, with, I suppose, the spur of thinking that they'd get on leave earlier, I think they rushed some of their jobs. But anyway, I took my time, and you balanced the steel plates on your knees and got them up and put the bolts on and put them all back. And then the same round the driver and co-drivers. You had a sort of a pressure plastic which you put around there. You had the chutes come off the back of the engine compartment with two tie rods that came to the back of the turret. The gun, you had a sort of a canvas. It must have been a waterproof canvas, so I can say it was a sort of grey-silvery colour, which you fitted over the mantle of the gun, again with this reddish plastic compound, and the same, you cover the end of the gun up. I'm just trying to... We didn't fit... I believe, if I remember rightly, there was an explosive charge put round the gun mantle and the gun end of the gun, which the driver had. I think, if I remember right, we had a button which you pressed, which blew off this. Once you come up out of the water, it cleared it. And they used to throw the switch or lever at the back and drop the chute off the back of the engine. But we must have fitted it. Must have fitted it because, or perhaps we didn't fit the explosive in, just the pressure plastic, because I know that after it was all completed, we drove down out of Aldershot, and I've never yet can remember where it was, but there was a quite a largish, I suppose, pond or lake, or perhaps it was specially prepared for the tanks, I don't know, but I remember it was concrete drive in one side and concrete drive out the other, and what we had to do was drive in, and it was a most... odd sensation of actually driving into the water, and you could hear the water gurgling round the and then the commander told you to stop, and we actually stopped in the middle, and you had to wait there, I forget how many minutes, 5 minutes or more, and you know, sort of keeping your fingers crossed that all your work had been it was really strange to see you could see the water on your periscope, but obviously, you know. And then say after 5-10 minutes, whatever time it was, I can't remember now, you were told to start up and drive out. And, well, I was okay, but I believe one or two of them got stuck in the middle, and once they stuck, they started getting a few leaks here and there, which was a bit naughty. But I can't remember where that was. But then after that, as I say, we were able to... we had short leaves, and then we were put on standby. And
were you aware at all that an invasion of Northwest Europe was imminent?
Oh yes, yes. How
did you
Well, because that they got the we want to one time we weren't allowed. Well, we weren't allowed out of the town. That's right. After our leaves, we were more or less, the town of Aldershot was more or less shut down to going outside. What one or two used to try and do, they used to get to London or get to outside. I don't know how they got the out of London, but anyway, they used to come back and they used to get off at Ash and walk then to Aldershot. But I think they caught on to that idea, and I think they had MPs waiting at Ash to catch them as they came off the train at Ash. George Skeets, the chappie that I told you I was with, his people lived at Ash. So we used to walk to his home and with Jack Barnes and just stay there, and his mother used to cook us supper some evenings before we walked back. And then they shortened the period of time. We were on a 24-hour standby. I'm just trying to think. So we were on a 24-hour standby. And I remember we were actually at George's home when we saw waves and waves of the gliders going over. And we knew that something was happening then. And sure enough, we got back to Aldershot. And there was something that was interesting. It's got nothing to actually do with the army, but it was at Aldershot. Yes, it was at Aldershot that we first heard a jet plane. That was very interesting because it was we had never heard a jet before, and where it came from, I don't know. But everybody was running out into the parade ground saying, "You know, it's a jet," and I always remember that. That's
possibly, by the way. It might have come from the research station at Palmborough.
Of course it could have gone. Yes, of course it could have gone. Yes, well, yes, yes. That's right, there. Yes. But as I say, it was the first. I always remember that. Someone yelling, it's a jet. And everybody running out, looking up and seeing this plane going over. It was quite interesting. But as I say, we were put on I think it was a 12-hour standby, and then it was shortened again. And it was just them waiting. And then suddenly there was, pack up and get moving. And we went down then to...
Do you remember how soon after D-Day this was? How soon after you'd seen the waves of aircraft?
Yes, it was about... it must have been 5 or 6 days.
Did you do any tactical training at all?
At Aldershot? No, I can't remember doing any at all.
Waterproofing,
that's right. But I don't think really there was enough ground there to really start doing anything. I think we went out once or twice, you know, but it was only just a case of there was no what I call tactical training, not where you could actually get any sort of a squadron getting out and into a situation. But no, I can't remember that at all. I think just one or two tanks went out
just for driving.
That was all. I can't think of anything that. And then we drove down again. My memory plays me for. I can remember we had to stop into this big assembly area. We went in, and it was just like one vast camp, which we were not allowed out at all. No, we were just confined to the camp. That was it. Again, it's a funny thing, isn't it? I mean, it's only little things that rankle an ordinary soldier, I suppose. But I think word went round that officers were allowed to go home on leave from there for a night or two nights. And I know we all felt, why the hell, what difference is this? If there's any sort of security to be broken, they can break it just as easy as we can. And I think that was a bit of resentment there, the fact that officers were considered to be far more trustworthy than the ordinary soldier. And I think that was, good luck to them. I mean, the fact they were able to get a hold to their families just before going over is great for them. But, it's that funny little feeling that, you know, you're more or less told that you can't go, but they can. But they're privileged, isn't it? And then we moved from there. And I can remember going down. I think we were only there for a couple of 3 days.
In the assembly area?
In the assembly area, yes.
What sort of place was it?
Oh, it was way out in the country. You know, I think we had... They put hats up for washing for ablutions. And I think we still slept by the tanks, if I remember rightly.
So it's as if you were in the field.
That's right, yes, yes. Oh, yes, we were down this lane, tank behind tank. And as I say, we just went to this wooden hut for ablutions, and that was it.
Did you have any news of what was going on the continent coming through?
No, I don't think we did. I was just trying to think again. It's funny, it's hazy after all these years. I know we were giving... We had to go to a big hut, groups at a time, and we were given escape packs. I always wish I'd kept mine. I never knew what happened to it, but it was a pack about as big as, you know, as big as that, and
6 inches long.
About 6 inches by 3 inches, and you had tablets in there, water purifying tablets. You had a little compass. There were tablets to keep you awake. Was a little map in there? No, there wasn't a map. I was just trying to think what there was in there. I think it was a needle and thread that they said you could convert your battle resin. Oh, I don't know. But it was a little escape pack, and I know you had these little cubes of concentrated meat, which you could mix with water to keep you going and things like that. I never knew what happened to mine. It lost in the way. But... And I think then, I think at the same time, we were issued with the invasion money, you know, the special little banknotes. And then I remember we left there, and we went down, I remember going through the town, people were throwing, of all things, throwing bottles of beer, and unless you caught it, there was a, you know, one heck of a lot of beer floating around. But, and if I remember rightly, we were spread out amongst private houses, and just for one night, we just took our bedding rolls and laid on the floor in these private houses. And then the next morning, we went down and started loading up onto the TLCs. It's so terrible, I can't remember.
Was it in a major port?
Oh, yes, I'm pretty sure it was a major port.
How was that loading done? Did you just drive on to the...
Just drive straight on, yes.
Did
yes.
you reverse on or go on straight?
Reversed on.
Was that difficult?
No. Well, you just obey your commands from the front, you know, that's no problem. I said to you before, the funny thing is, you get used to a tank. You know your width. It's like driving a car. You get used to the width and length. You can place a tank just where you want to. You know, it doesn't matter about the size. It's like driving a lorry or driving a van. It's the size you accept it, and you know exactly where you're placing it. No, I think most tank drivers can, you know, put a tank where they want to. I can't remember much more about them. Stuart tried to jog my memory. He said that when we were on the TLC, I know we were allowed out of the tanks. We were allowed out of the tanks, but we weren't allowed up on deck. And I can remember, at least I don't think, well, we were allowed on one deck, but we weren't allowed on top deck, I don't think. I can't remember. But Stuart said to me that when the sea got rough, the tanks were sliding. I faintly remember it, but I know, if I remember rightly, that we had to go down and shackle them, but that was something, again, which I can't really remember. I can remember, eventually, they told us, I suppose we were off the French coast, I don't know, but they told us we had to get into the tanks, and then they were sealed from the outside. And that was one section I didn't like, because I felt that in the event of the ship being hit, at least, well, whether you'd have a chance to get out or not, I don't know, but I did feel that once you were in the tank, sealed down, there was no chance at all. You actually, and the funny thing was that, I don't know which battleship, well, one or two battleships were firing over us from the channel. And every time they fired, it was just as though someone was hitting the side of the tank with a hammer. And you were never quite sure whether you were being hit by a shell or whether it was there, the guns were firing. But, you know, every now and again, someone would say, oh, you know, that's the battleship so-and-so firing, which sort of helped to quell our fears. But it was a bit...
how long did this last?
Quite a while, yes.
Did you actually see the French coast when you were on deck?
No.
What could you see when you were on the deck?
Well, we didn't see anything at all. I mean, we weren't allowed up on top deck. I can't remember that at all. I can only remember coming... We were allowed to sit on the outsides of the tanks. I remember that for quite a while. And then... Then we were ordered into the tanks themselves, and then we were sealed. I'm sure I can't remember. Well, certainly didn't see the coast at all. I never remember seeing the coast. The first thing I knew was that the front of the craft being dropped, and again there was a hold up. I think. When we first arrived at the coast, I think, if I remember rightly, seeing the sea, and it looked bloody deep, and I thought, God, surely they don't expect us to drive into that. And I think it was Stuart or somebody who said that he thought it was too deep for the tanks to come down. And they waited a bit. This is, I think, where we waited quite a while until the tide dropped, and then we came off. In actual fact, when we came off, if I remember rightly, the water was much higher than our bogies. You know, we virtually came off dry, as you want us to say. But again, it's.
Do you remember if anyone went and actually tested the water depth with a pole or a plumb line or anything like that?
I believe Stuart did. I believe Stuart insisted on the depth being taken, because, if I remember rightly, They had an argument, this naval board. I think basically he was wanting to get rid of us and get back out of it. I know there's an awful lot of stuff flying around, but I know that, I think it was Stuart who said no. He was sure that it was too deep for us to go off. I know one or two. I don't know if it was our regiment or whether it was a part of our brigade that went off a bit too soon and. Unfortunately, you know, it was too deep for them. They lost them straight away. But
how far back in the ship were you?
I was well inside. I think I must have been halfway in the ship. I can remember. I can see the dropping down. I can remember that.
The ramp going.
Yes, and. And I can remember it was. Was it breaking dawn? It's funny, I can't remember. I can remember going up. There was all the white tapes for us to follow through the minefields. I can remember coming up through that.
What was the ground like immediately beyond the beach? Do you remember?
Sand dunes. Oh, well, there's sand dunes. Yes, and then.
And the beach was that. Do you remember anything about that?
Well, it didn't seem, actually, from what I can remember, it seemed a very short beach. It didn't, you know, it wasn't as though we were travelling over a long sandy beach before we got to the sand dunes. It seemed to me that we came off and we went a matter of 20 or 30 yards, and we were actually into the sand dunes, you know, a very short run.
How were you directed? Did you just follow the tank in the front, or were there tactical signs, or military policemen, or some other means of giving you direction?
I have an idea there were military police guiding us through. Can't be sure, but I have an idea there were military police there. Yes, I think it was a case of following the tank ahead anyway.
So you went in over the beach, which was a narrow beach, then up into sand dunes.
Yes.
And then what did the train look like after that? Do you recall?
Next thing I can only remember is it being in fields, amongst fields, and being up into up against hedgerows.
Did the landing and movement inland go smoothly?
Oh yes, yes. In actual fact, I was surprised. Really, I expected to meet a great deal more opposition, and I was very surprised at the fact that we were able to go in so far without any trouble. You know, that it was a great relief, I must admit. But you still had some shell fire coming in, but there was nothing. Nothing to what we had expected. I mean, obviously with an invasion we knew that our lads were doing very well, but I still expected far more opposition than we actually encountered. It's a bit hazy, to be perfectly honest. It's so long ago that there's the odd things where Stuart produced a bottle of Vat 69 to celebrate his 21st birthday, and we all had a swig at that and said, thank God we've arrived safely. You know, that was one of the things. But, regarding actual tank movements and that, I'd be honest, I can't remember a great deal. As I say, the thing after landing was that I can remember we were in amongst the hedgerows and sort of got established there, you know, with all the and again it gets a bit hazy. I mean, I can remember them. I'm just trying to think when it was they came up with I can't remember whether we stayed there or although I think we'd moved again after a short period of time. We were there for that day, and I think we moved again.
What sort of formation did you take up when you were in the hedgerows? Did you have the same sort of league as you would have put up in the desert?
Oh, no, entirely different. No, I mean, you'd league up with the soft skins and then your armour stuff around the outside, whereas the tanks would just push up against the hedgerow and you put a bit of netting around them. And the soft skins would be an entirely different area. You know, you wouldn't... it's a different thing altogether. And I don't think, apart... In all the movements, I can't remember any time where I would say the tanks and the soft skins were together once we arrived in Normandy. I mean, they usually used to keep them back, way out of it. I was just trying to think when it was that we had two interesting things. Was the one that we were supplied with some bread, white bread, which was quite good, and also a bottle of beer each. And also we were given an opportunity to go along to where the soft skins were and have a shower. They'd fitted showers up for us, which was great.
Have you ever had that in the desert?
Oh, no, I can't ever remember having showers in the desert.
But you had a mobile bath unit in Normandy?
Yes. I think in the desert it was a case of, just washing yourself.
Do you have any notion of how long you were in Normandy before you first went into action? You know, in terms of terms of the number of days.
Oh, gosh, no. No, that's terrible, isn't it?
Too blurry and hazy. What were you actually doing, you know, in that period before you went into action for the first time? How did you keep yourself occupied during the days?
Well, it might sound a funny thing to say. I think it was boring. I think you used to write letters, ensure that that everything was working correctly, you know, your engine was running and your guns were clean. I can't really remember anything. I mean, no, I think it was a case of... sounds silly, doesn't it, to say that one could get very bored very easily. You knew you were going to go into action, and I suppose basically you were looking forward to moving, but it's difficult because, you see, unlike in North Africa, where you're actually moving from one area to another in a either box formation or and whatever, in Normandy, all the fields, all the hedgerows, all look the same, and without the maps, which obviously the commanders had, you were told the name of an operation, Epsom or Goodwood or Hill 112, but they all run one into another. It's terrible to say, I suppose, but you know, you were just there doing a job, and it wasn't. You know, I'm not being much help to you in that respect. I'm afraid that, you know, I can't even remember Epsom, quite honestly.
That would have been the first time.
The first time, yes, yes, yes. I can't remember that at all.
Stuart's first.
That's right. Yes, right. Yes.
Do you remember seeing anything of the local civilian population when you were?
No, I can remember that shortly after we'd landed, I think a couple of our NCOs got picked off and by a sniper, and if my memory serves me right, they traced this sniper to the upper window of a farmhouse not far from us, and it turned out it was a young woman who'd evidently become very friendly with a German officer who'd been lately been killed, and I think they dispatched her a little quickly. I can remember actually being machine gunned by we were told that there was no German Air Force, but I can remember being machine gunned. Actually, they did, a couple of planes did come over, and it was for just a brief visit, but that was interesting. And also, what else happened that, shortly after we'd landed, I can't remember the name of the village, terrible, I'm sorry, this is not me and any help to you, but the infantry officer approached the squadron leader and said they had knocked out a Panther tank, and do you think that your fellows would be interested in seeing it? And I can't remember his name. Would it be Leakey? Major Leakey? Or was it Major Watts? These names, all they've all gone now. But anyway, whoever he was, he said, yes, I think it'd be a good idea. So we went along with the... This infantry officer, and we took us all round through the back alleyways and showed us this Panther, which was knocked down in the village street, and they knocked it out with a piet through the side, and that was the first time, although we've been shown photographs in North Africa of the Panther tank, and we had been told that the Tiger tank was very, very slow and very mechanically unsound, and the Panther wasn't all that good either. And I know it came a severe shock when we saw the size of this Panther. And, you know, you when you realise the size of the gun and the thickness of the armour, I wish I hadn't seen it, because, you know, you suddenly realise what you're up against. And although it had been knocked out and the crew were inside, I mean, it was, you know, it was marvellous, the fact that they could have knocked it out, the infantry knocked it out. But I know we all went back very subdued back to the squadron, thinking, my God, if that's what we've got to go up against, you know. And certainly, you know, whereas Mark 3s and Mark 4s, although they had the equivalent gun to us, you felt, oh, well. It did, psychologically, the word Panther tank, when it came up on your headphones, it did have an effect. It really did. I mean, you thought, well, what the hell chance have we got? You know, it's all very well saying you outflank them and you do this, but the point is, you know very well that when you're crossing open ground, this outflanking, I mean, although the situation, as you know, in Normandy is where you can do a lot of movement, unlike the desert, it's certainly a tank that was to be feared. I think so, anyway, and I think it was, I mean, they say, well, you can hit it in the side and it will brew just the same, but you still have in your mind that the thickness of the armour and the size of the gun and the design of the tank, let's face it, a beautiful design. And with the knowledge that, I mean, I had seen a Panther tanks fire,